The new 114th Congress has convened this week, and we will talk with two members of Wisconsin's congressional delegation this hour to hear how they plan to vote on the Keystone XL pipeline authorization and other issues on the docket. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, January 8th. We like to invite our members of Congress to talk with you on a fairly regular basis. And today we have with us Democratic U.S. Representative Ron Kind from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District and Republican U.S. Representative Reed Ribble from Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District. What questions do you have for either of them, or what would you like them to know about the issues that are before Congress this session? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. First up, Ron Kind, a Democratic U.S. Representative from La Crosse. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy, and Happy New Year. Go Packers.
Yeah, Happy New Year and go Packers. That's right. Well,
getting ready for Ice Bowl 2 up there Sunday, maybe.
By the way, we're going to be talking about Ice Bowl 2 tomorrow morning between 6 and 7 o'clock. It is lots of nostalgia and excitement going on here.
Nice.
Is it a Happy New Year for you? You're a part of the smallest Democratic minority in the House in many, many years. How do you feel about this particular congressional session?
Well, Joy, you have to stay hopeful, and hopefully we have a Congress. Now, granted, the Republicans will be in the majority in the House and the Senate, but with that majority comes responsibility to govern. And I hope that this Congress, when we meet, we learn how to trust each other a little bit more, spend a little more time talking and listening to each other, work hard to find common ground, and focused on what we need to do to grow and strengthen the middle class and keep this economic recovery going. If we can keep the focus on that, as opposed to endless investigations of this president or nitpicking or blocking things all the time, then there is a potential of some significant work getting done in this session, but too early to tell. So cautious optimism I'd put myself in.
Nancy Pelosi will once again serve as House Minority Leader. She set out a Democratic agenda that includes increasing working class wages, a hike in infrastructure spending, eliminate tax breaks for companies that move their headquarters overseas. How does that line up with your priorities?
Well, again, if we can act as a real partner with the private sector and the growth that's happening, and granted, not everyone has shared in that growth. Obviously, the upper 1% have done incredibly well over the last 6-7 years, and a lot of other working families are still struggling. So we need to pursue policies that's going to strengthen and open up those doors of opportunity to those working families and to the younger generation, too. And I think there's a way of doing that, but if it's just reverting back to the old trickle-down economics, we've done that throughout the 2000s. And it hasn't lifted all boats. So I think our nation, quite frankly, needs a new agenda that is focused on American competitiveness, innovation, creativity, and the reinvestment in the human capital of our country, quality educational opportunities, making it a little bit easier for students to afford higher education without going into deep debt, the quality job training programs. And the president's going to speak to that tomorrow as far as technical schools, vocational educational opportunities. So I think that's going to be an exciting announcement. The basic research funding that we're lagging behind now, the expansion of broadband and high-speed internet, and the infrastructure modernization that we're long overdue to lay the groundwork for sustained growth. I mean, those are some areas that I hope we could find some commonality around and try to work on, because I think they'll directly benefit working families throughout the country as well.
You're going to serve on the House Ways and Means Committee again. What are your goals for that committee?
Well, we have a few big ones. Obviously, we've got jurisdiction to raise some revenue for infrastructure investment, and there are a lot of ideas, but we need to start having some serious discussions to find where the consensus lies. Every state, every community in every state comes back and complains about the roads that are deteriorating, the bridges that are in bad shape, and if we're not careful, we're going to look like a third-world nation before long, and that might become an insult to other third-world nations who are investing in their infrastructure, and we're not. Plus, it will create good-paying jobs right now, so why aren't we doing this? We have an opportunity to reform a tax code that's antiquated, it's outdated, it's riddled with complex special interest loopholes, and it hasn't been fair for most families or small businesses. Hard for me to explain why most small businesses in Wisconsin are paying a higher effective tax rate than virtually any Fortune 500 company. And that's the way this code is right now. So if we can get together on that, you know, it's a once-in-a-generation opportunity. And then there are some trade negotiations that are taking place. And I know on the Democratic side, you know, trade is a tougher issue, but we're only 4% of the world population. Most of the accelerated growth is happening in the less developed nations. Of course, we've got to be in there competing with our goods, our products, our services. So these trade negotiations in the Pacific Rim and with Europe will help establish the rules of trade in the 21st century so we can level the playing field for our workers and our businesses so they can compete fairly. And we need that to promote growth and good job creation here at home.
Well, it so happens we have a caller who has a question about trade. Jim in River Falls. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having this program. Yeah, I guess my concerns with that is all these negotiations are being done pretty much in private with the corporations being represented. The public isn't privy to the information that's being given in those negotiations. And I think there's going to be a push for fast tracking of whatever is
Trans-Pacific Pact.
Right.
Yeah, and so I guess I want to know how we can be assured that, you know, environmental standards are going to be included, workers' rights, fair pay. I mean, we've seen in the past with NAFTA that there's takings rights, and if companies pollute, they can challenge environmental laws of the nations they're in, and they, if they're not allowed to pollute, they can sue the governments and be paid damages for not being able to pursue their interests.
All right. Is that going to be fast-tracked, Congressman Kind?
Well, there is legislation that might come up that would basically enable the president to negotiate these agreements, bring it back to Congress without it being subject to amendment. And I think you need to do that, Joy, because otherwise no nation will negotiate with us. Because they know that they're not just negotiating with a president, but with 535 independent contractors in Congress that will change the terms of an agreement overnight. And no country's going to put themselves through that. We don't allow the Senate to amend any foreign treaty. And this, in essence, is another treaty with other countries related to trade. But let me be clear. You know, I have not come out in support or opposition to any of the negotiations that are taking place because they're not completed. The agreements are still a work in progress. But there's been this myth that's formed that somehow it's done behind closed doors, that various individuals and groups don't have access. Everyone has a seat at the table. Labor groups, environmental groups, consumer groups, human rights groups, they all have a seat at the table. They all have access to the language that is being negotiated. Our USTR team and Mike Froman, who's the trade ambassador, is having countless meetings with all groups across the U.S. Spectre. So people have input. And more importantly, members of Congress does too. I've had countless meetings with our trade representatives, walking through text, bringing concerns to them, getting updates from them where the negotiations are, because that's exactly what Congress should be doing right now, working with the administration to make sure that we're not surprised when an agreement does come back for our consideration. But this is also important, and Jim mentioned NAFTA. This is not going to be a NAFTA-type agreement. For the first time, we're going to have core international labor and environmental standards that will be negotiated in the body of the agreement, fully enforceable like any other provision, again, as an attempt to raise standards globally upwards rather than a race to the bottom. But here's my concern, Joanne, and this gets to the heart of the whole trade debate. What are our choices here? And I see we have one of three. We can turn our back on trade negotiations, go home, and we'll have a global trading regime with no rules at all. And that'll be a race to the bottom. And it will not be in our interests, our workers' or businesses' interests, to be trying to compete in that environment. We won't be able to. Or we're going to have a global trading system with China's rules. And they would love nothing better than to step into this and establish the rules of trade themselves if we're not at the table providing leadership. And the third option is we've got to be there. Got to be there negotiating the best standards that make the best sense for our workers and our businesses in America. That's it. It's nothing more complicated than that. Those are the three choices that we really face. No rules, China's rules, or our rules going forward. And that's why it's important that we work hard to get the best agreement possible.
We have just a minute before our news break. Bernie in Elkhorn, very briefly.
What you just said, Congressman Kind, is not true. The labor, environmental interests, et cetera, have not added a seat at the table with the TPP negotiations. Only the corporate interests have had a seat at the table. And unfortunately, the corporate Democrats and all the Republicans are just going to vote along with this, just like NAFTA. It's terrible for our labor, terrible for our environmental laws. Yeah. It's a disgrace.
And now we just have a minute. So environmental and labor interests do or don't have a seat at the table?
Well, they absolutely do, Joy. And Eugene, I could go through chapter and verse of the number of meetings that labor and environmental leaders have met with USTR officials and been involved in the negotiations, had access to the text, members of Congress do. But somehow those opposed to trade have this myth that they're trying to perpetrate out there, that somehow it's a closed door process, and it's just not true. And if you talk to any labor leader, if they're being honest with you, will admit that they've been in these meetings and they've had access to the text and they've been providing input with the administration as well.
We are going to talk about the Keystone XL oil pipeline coming up after we check the news and other issues before Congress with Congressman Ron Kind from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Ron Kind, a Democratic U.S. representative from La Crosse, about issues facing Congress. Coming up just a little bit past 7:30, we will welcome in U.S. Representative Reed Ribble of Appleton. Well, despite a veto threat from President Obama, Congress is poised today to vote on a bill that would green light the construction of the Keystone XL oil pipeline. And Representative Kind, are you going to vote for or against that bill, and why?
Well, I've been consistent in opposing it. There's no reason for Congress to intervene at this point when the process of review is still ongoing, not to mention a state lawsuit that's pending before the Nebraska State Supreme Court about the siting issue in that. You know, I can only imagine what Wisconsin residents would feel if the United States Congress were to intervene and dictate what exactly area that a pipeline should run through the state of Wisconsin with no local input, with no people back in the state having any say in it whatsoever. We'd be pretty upset with that ourselves. And not to mention whether this is even economically feasible anymore, given how far and how fast oil prices have plummeted. And what really has me bothered is that oil-producing companies in the United States have to pay a fee for a cleanup fund when there are spillages, when there are accidents that happen. The Canadian companies are not required to do so. And we know there will be spills. There always are with pipelines. And it will be on the back of the American taxpayer to have to pay for all of the cleanup costs. And this tar oil is extremely hard to clean up, and it will be very expensive. At a minimum, we should be asking the Canadian oil companies to also be contributing to that cleanup fund before we allow them to site their pipeline right through the heart of America. So those are some of the things, I think, that need to be cleaned up before Congress, in its political wisdom, decides to intervene and just dictate exactly where it needs to go.
Carl in Wausau is with us. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Joy. Regarding the Keystone Pipeline, my concern was, if we're reading online with the workers on the Alaskan pipeline and how bad a shape that is after 40 years and spills that are happening and emergency valves that haven't been tested and probably could not shut off the flow of oil, contributing to larger oil spills. Well, what is the shape of our Alaskan pipeline? And I'd like to hear that before they even start talking about building another large pipeline like the size of Alaska.
Quick react to that, Representative Kind.
Well, it is an important point. I mean, you need upgrade, you need maintenance, you need that continuous reinvestment in it, and Alaska has fallen behind, and there have been countless spills up in Alaska that we know has occurred throughout the years. So we have to expect the same with a new pipeline coming down from Canada. But this whole project has been oversold as far as the jobs it would be created. There would be short-term jobs in building the pipeline. But afterwards, most economic studies I found, it would create 35 permanent jobs, that pipeline, 35 here in the United States. So this idea that it's going to be this huge job-creating economic boom, I think, is just another political tack that those who want to jam this on the president are trying to utilize.
Politico reported that House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy will bring up a bill next week to fund the Department of Homeland Security, but include language that will limit funding for President Obama's executive action on immigration. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, it's silly. I mean, the major portion of President Obama's immigration order that he announced this last month doesn't go into effect until June 1. So if the Republicans are really serious about stopping what the president wants to accomplish, then fix the immigration system. Come forward with their own bill rather than trying to defund something that would stop the president, which I think would hurt other aspects of homeland security, including border security, that most Republicans are in favor of. So instead of contorting themselves and finding other ways of avoiding the issue, they need to roll up their sleeves, get serious in trying to fix a broken immigration system, because the president's patience has run out. He's given them 6 years now to try to deal with this in some fashion. But instead of doing that, they're trying to erect roadblocks to what he's trying to accomplish.
Yeah. I'm looking at an article from Bloomberg. It says, on the second day of Congress's new session, U.S. House of Representative Republicans lost a bid to quickly pass legislation to relax requirements under the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial regulatory law. Apparently, they used a procedure that requires two-thirds support for passage. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, I think there was a procedural vote. There were a lot of members who felt this should be heard more in the Committee of Jurisdiction before it's brought to the floor, and I think that's the route that they're going to take now. I mean, if you're going to be talking about financial reform, there needs to be a lot of study, some hearings, some input into it, because this stuff gets complicated very fast. And instead of bringing it onto a suspension calendar, which is what it's called, it should go through regular order.
Well, let's take Bruce and Toma. He's been waiting. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. I was wondering about an idea to stimulate the economy so people would have more money. Instead of, you know, raising minimum wage is one thing, but how about increasing the standard deduction so that people at the bottom could exempt more of the money that they earn, and they'd have more money to spend. They spend more money, and they would drive the demand side of the economy.
Is this kind of thing possible, Representative Kennedy?
Well, it is, and I think there needs to be more focus on that. You know, let's face it, the bottom 95% of the economic ladder has not seen the type of growth that the upper 5% or even 1% has. So, again, this is a difference in economic philosophy between trickle-down, tax cuts to the top, hoping that's going to stimulate job creation, or empowering working families and the American consumer. And when 70% of the U.S. economy is consumer-driven, there ought to be more focus on these families and what their spending needs are.
I wanted to ask you about this terrorism attack in Paris yesterday. French officials have arrested one suspect in the shooting at the magazine that printed the cartoons of Mohammed, but are still seeking two other suspects as of earlier today. President Obama yesterday condemned the attack, which killed 12, as cowardly and evil, and said the U.S. would help bring those responsible to justice. He said that he would instruct his national security team to remain vigilant in protecting Americans around the world. What's your reaction to what happened?
Well, there's no question it is cowardly, it is evil, and it's such a tragic event, too. But nothing has galvanized support for free speech around the globe quicker than this one event. But the key to this is what the voices in the moderate Muslim world say about it. That's where the values need to change. There's very little that the West or a nation like us can do to try to influence the opinion and the Muslim world of 1.2 billion people, but it's got to come from their own opinion leaders. And listening and seeing what their reaction in the coming days, I think, is going to set the tone throughout that community.
So President Obama, as we mentioned, already vowed to veto any bill authorizing the Keystone XL oil pipeline. He also says he's prepared to break out the veto pen a lot over the next 2 years. How hopeful are you that there's going to be any meaningful agreement on legislation?
Well, again, I think there's the potential. I mean, there are some areas when it comes to some tax reform and changes that need to be made there. When it comes to infrastructure investment in our nation, I think we're going to have problems over budget items where the Republican majority are going to, again, indiscriminately try to cut funding in a lot of key investments that we ought to be making as a nation to stay competitive in innovation in the 21st century global economy. And I think even with trade, depending on where these negotiations end up, could be an opportunity to work with this administration, the president, whose trade team is out trying to get the best agreement possible. But I'm sure there's going to be fights. I mean, there's a short period of kumbaya of the potential of cooperation and bipartisanship, but it really is going to depend on the attitude of the new majority. If they want to waste their time with countless investigations, like a Benghazi committee, even though the Republican House Intelligence Committee basically issued a report this last month that said that what the administration said was true. There's no conspiracy here. And yet they're going to be spending millions and millions of dollars still going forward on this Benghazi committee, even though one of their own House committees have debunked all the myths that have surrounded Benghazi. So we'll see in the coming weeks.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Ron Kind, a Democratic U.S. representative from La Crosse. Coming up, we will talk with Reed Ribble, a Republican U.S. representative from Appleton, and we'll ask him about many of these same issues and any other issues you want to talk about. What about this Keystone XL oil pipeline vote that is scheduled for today? Yay or nay on that? What else is an issue that matters to you? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We continue our discussion of issues before Congress now with Republican U.S. Representative Reed Ribble from Appleton, who represents Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District in northeastern Wisconsin. Good morning, Congressman Ribble.
Hey, Happy New Year, Joy.
Happy New Year to you. Hey, are you excited about the Ice Bowl coming up?
I am. You know, having Green Bay right in my congressional district, I'm going to be at the game on Sunday. I hope it's nice and cold.
You do. Now, were you there for the first one? Everybody else was.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. It would have been a neat piece of history to be there, but nope, I wasn't there.
Well, the Republicans have the biggest majority in the House in decades. What are you hoping your party will accomplish with this advantage?
Well, I think obviously we want to do things that we believe will spur economic growth, increase wages for the middle class, and help our economy become stronger and better. And I think those are the types of things we're going to focus on.
Well, what about what we just heard Representative Kind say, that he hopes that that's what you focus on too, but he's hearing about more Benghazi investigations and other things that aren't along those lines.
I haven't heard anything about more Benghazi investigations at all. And so we're focused on trying to get the economy rolling again, and we're going to be sending over a bill to the U.S. Senate today or tomorrow on Keystone Pipeline, which the State Department's own executive summary report says will increase U.S. GDP by $3.4 billion. That's the type of thing we need to do. And by the way, Keystone Pipeline is a big project for Wisconsin manufacturers. A lot of the piping and pipe fitters that are working in Wisconsin, particularly up in the 8th District, will be participating in that construction project. And so it's good for the Wisconsin economy as well as the U.S. economy.
Respond to the Democratic concerns that this thing is still being, you know, there are still concerns, and this is still being negotiated, and we don't need to rush it.
Well, Congress's patience has run out. It's been 6 years, 6.5 years that this has been going on. And I think, you know, the president wants to talk about his patience running out on immigration reform. Our patience run out on this. 6.5 years is plenty of time. The State Department's report has been positive regarding Keystone. And if you look at the oil that's been being transferred either by truck or rail, it's been a worse environmental impact than it would have been if we had had that in a secure pipeline. There are 75,000 miles of pipeline buried underneath the ground in the U.S., and all these proclaimed disasters that people claim are out there just aren't happening.
Yeah. Gas prices are pretty low right now. Congressman Kind and others say, do we have to do this right now?
Well, it's not a matter of do we have to do this right now. This is all in preparation for future use. I think the idea that you don't do things because the price is low today does not prepare you for high prices that will come tomorrow. And so if we want to help restrict or restrain the rate of growth in pricing on energy for U.S. consumers who today are filling their cars up for $35 to $50 instead of $50 to $80, which all impacts our national economy in a positive way, we should be planning now and getting this built now because it's going to take 2 years to complete. And we don't know what the economic environment will be 2 years on the energy side. And that's why you should do these things when they're available to do.
The president has already vowed to veto the bill, though, and there are not the votes to override the veto. So what's the point?
Well, we'll see if there's the votes to override the veto or not. I think that if we were to just say, the president's going to veto what we're going to do, let's just stop doing anything for 2 years, the American people would reject that as well. What's going to happen here over the next year and a half is that the American people are going to see a clear distinction between the Republican agenda for the economy and growth and the president's agenda, which will ultimately set up the presidential battle that will take place in 2016 as the American people decide, do we want a third term of Barack Obama, which we do not think they do, or do we want a new direction for the country?
Randy in Madison is with us now. Hi, Randy.
Hi. I got a question for the senator. Why would he think that this people of the United States would want to build a Keystone pipeline to the state of Texas when Texas' own governors want to succeed from our union? Why should we invest in people that don't want to be with us?
Okay. I think that it's an interesting question. The secession movement in this country is tiny, 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 and the governors of these states are anxious to have the Keystone Pipeline built through their states, and the reason they are is because of the property taxes that are ongoing that will continue to be paid. For example, the estimated property tax, this is right out of the State Department's report, the total estimated property tax from the proposed project is $55.6 million. Stop and think of the impact on local school districts, local school systems, and infrastructure in all of those counties across the country. We talk about the need for more investment in education. Here's a great way to have the Canadians helping pay to educate our children.
Well, assuming that President Obama vetoes the bill as he has promised and it is not overridden, do you think the House should just keep on passing more Keystone bills?
Not sure. I think we'll cross that bridge when it happens. It certainly will be an interesting decision for the president. He apparently has made up his mind to oppose construction labor interests in this country, oppose lower energy costs in the country. And that's a decision he's making. The voters will make a decision on that in 2016 if he opposes it.
We have a couple of minutes before a short news break, and then we'll continue talking about some other issues before Congress and priorities that you have. But Republicans reelected John Boehner for a third term as House Speaker, and he had, though, the biggest number of defections for an incumbent speaker in the last 100 years or so. You voted for John Boehner. Why?
Well, because there was no, in my opinion, there was no legitimate candidate that ran against the speaker. There is a process that we use in selecting the Republican speaker when we're in the majority. Any member of the Republican conference could have stood up back in August or September or October, laid out a platform and strategy for where they wanted to take the Republican conference in the next Congress, how they would lead the House of Representatives as speaker. They could have done all those things. The position of Speaker of the House is second in line to the presidency, and so it requires a serious person to run for it, and that means a serious person will put together a serious campaign, not one that is haphazard and put together 24 hours before and done on Fox News.
Our guest is Reed Ribble. He is a Republican U.S. representative from Appleton, and he is talking with us about issues and votes that are coming up in Congress. and we're welcoming your input. We're welcoming any questions you have. Maybe you want to tell Congressman Ribble your stance on an issue. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Congressman Reed Ribble. Congressman Ribble is a Republican U.S. representative from Appleton, representing Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, talking with him about what's on the agenda for the new 114th Congress, which has convened this week. And welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I wanted to ask you your reaction, Congressman Ribble, to the attack in Paris that left 12 dead, and President Obama vowing U.S. help in tracking down the perpetrators and to keeping the U.S. safe from similar attacks. What is your reaction?
Yeah, the attack in Paris was not just an attack on the French nation or the people of France, but it was an attack on free press. And one of the things that is absolutely sacrosanct to free thinking Americans is this idea of freedom of the press. And this attack on a press agency and cartoon conglomeration that chose to speak freely about their opinions, and let's face it, they would on occasion be as rough on Christianity as they were on Islam, is offensive to the core. It offends every single American. And I condemn it in the most strong language that you possibly can. And I believe that the United States ought to stand very, very strong with the people of France at this moment.
Tell them you're busy, Congressman Ribble. you helped introduce a bill yesterday that would stop congressional pay if Congress fails to pass budget bills on time. How much do you think that's going to help?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is we passed a one-year version, a watered-down version of this piece of legislation called No Budget, No Pay a couple of years ago after the Senate had failed to pass a budget for three consecutive years. Miraculously, about 20 days later, the Senate produced a budget. And so we know that enforcement triggers will make members of Congress act. And, you know, there's a law that requires the Congress to not just pass a budget, but also to complete their 12 spending bills annually by September 30th. And in the last 40 years, it's never been completed on time even once. And so the law requires it. There's no enforcement triggers if the Congress ignores it. And, you know, this big omnibus bill that was just signed into law by President Obama in December was the result of the Congress not acting on their individual spending bills on time in the last session. And so it had to be done in a big 1,000-page bill. The U.S. Senate didn't pass a single appropriation bill or spending bill in the last Congress. The House was only modestly better. They passed 7 of them. And it's ridiculous. And so what No Budget, No Pay would do would put an enforcement trigger. If the Congress doesn't do its job, members don't get paid until they do. And I think the American people appreciate this type of legislation. They know that it will work because they are held responsible and accountable in their jobs. And so we're going to keep pushing for it.
Let's take a call from Dave in Elroy next. Hello, Dave.
Hi.
Hey, Dave.
Hi. I'd like to know why the Republicans are so intent on repealing Obamacare. We've already been down that road where we had insurance companies that denied people's claims. I myself experienced that. I had cancer. The treatment I needed was specifically covered in my policy, yet the insurance company did everything it could to try to get out of paying for that, delaying and whatnot, you know, and hoping I would die, which I didn't. And now the Republicans want to go back to that, and I'd like to know why.
Yeah, well, Dave, I'm glad you didn't die, and I hope you're doing well and that your health is getting better. We believe that the Affordable Care Act addressed access for Americans to insurance, but not to health care. And so if you don't address the issue of access to health care, but force a person to purchase a product that they may not, in some parts of the country, be able to use because there's not adequate service providers, we think that it's not the right approach to fix it. Regarding specifically the concern that you have, I believe that you can fix and actually make reforms within the healthcare system to make sure that citizens that find themselves in your physical condition for reasons not of their own doing at all, but just because they got sick, there ought to be certain limits and criteria that are placed on the insurance provider so that they can't cancel your insurance. And we can do that and take and replace the Affordable Care Act with something that we believe will not reduce jobs, that we believe can reduce the cost of health care, that we believe will help people not have access to insurance but have access to health care itself. We think that there's a better way to go about it. And so that's why.
Well, President Obama would of course, veto a bill that would repeal the Affordable Care Act. Is there anything you can do to improve the Affordable Care Act?
The president has said numerous times, if you don't like the Affordable Care Act, send me reforms. Let's talk about it. Let's fix it. No piece of legislation is perfect. These are all things he said. Let's fix it. But every time we send a reform over there, he postures it as another repeal vote. And when we send over the medical device tax fix and we send over the 40-hour work week fix, we're going to find out whether he was truthful when he said those things. And we believe that he's not going to be. We believe he will veto those things and that he doesn't really want to reform it, that he believes it was perfect the first time and the American people will continue to suffer with ever-increasing premiums, with not having access to health care, but being forced to buy products they can't use with very high deductibles. And so we're going to continue to try to fix this to the degree we can. We'll reveal the president's position for what it really is, because now Harry Reid is not standing between him and reforms that could make it better for the American people.
What is the 40-hour work week fix?
Yeah, well, the 40-hour work week fix is inside the Affordable Care Act. They labeled a full-time worker as someone who works 30 hours rather than 40. Since the 1930s, the work week in the United States, the full-time work week has always been defined as 40 hours. Under the Affordable Care Act, it was changed to 30 hours. And I saw in my own district grocery store chains, restaurant chains, and others taking hundreds of employees and cutting their hours from 32 hours to 29, from 39 hours to 29. And so all we want to do is reinstate that a 40-hour work week is a 40-hour work week, and that is a full-time work period, so that those part-time employees can work more hours because they've been penalized by the law.
Let's go to Zach in Wapaka now. Hello, Zach.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hey,
I have
good morning, Zach.
For Congressman. Regarding the Keystone Pipeline, it sounds a lot like things that we've seen before. President will veto, as promised, he'll veto. It seems like that's the most frustrating thing that we have in politics. Instead of forcing a bill to know the president is going to veto and then placing the blame on the president, why not give him a concession so that we can get this bill done and move forward with people's livelihood and jobs building this pipeline?
Sure. For the last 4 years, the president's not said anything about a veto. This is the first time he's said anything about a veto. His own State Department is supportive of the Keystone Pipeline based on their own report. And so we don't know whether the president will actually veto this or not. And so we think we have to send it over to him because the State Department has already said it's a good idea. The administration has been dragging their feet for 6.5 years. It's time to have a hard decision on it. And then at least you can plan or not plan. And you know, I find it interesting because a lot of my colleagues across the aisle talk a lot about infrastructure and how infrastructure spending creates jobs and increases the economy. This is the largest infrastructure job available to us right now, and it is, in fact, shovel-ready. It's ready to go. And so we ought to be moving on it so that we can put some 45,000 to 50,000 construction workers to work with high-paying unionized jobs right away. And so I hear your frustration, but the president has not offered any counter-proposal throughout the entire time we've been here. And this will pass with bipartisan support in both chambers. Republicans and Democrats alike will support this legislation.
So it was reported this week that Republicans will bring up a bill next week to limit funding for President Obama's executive action on immigration, which presumably President Obama would veto as well. How concerned are you about this issue?
Well, I'm concerned about it because I believe it was an unconstitutional move that the president took. And so I always have a concern when the president goes beyond the separation of powers and decides to do something arbitrarily rather than faithfully executing the law. The laws are relatively clear on immigration, and the president should faithfully execute. That's his responsibility under the Constitution. Given that he's chosen not to do that, we decided that what we would do is we'll completely fund Homeland Security. We're going to fund it 100% so that our homeland can be secure, that the border can be secure. We're going to fund it exactly the way that both Republicans and Democrats have agreed to as far as the top-line number. We're just going to say in the language someplace we'll put there that the president cannot use any of this funding or any fees. Will ban any use of the money for the president's executive amnesty. Now, what that would give us time to do then, now that we have a Republican majority in the House and Senate, is actually begin to advance immigration reform in a way that we believe will help grow our economy and make the path smoother for those trying to enter this country legally and less smooth for those trying to enter the country illegally. We want to make it easy for people to do the right thing and more difficult for them to do it the wrong way.
Well, we have just a minute to go. Is there another priority that you want to work on this
session? Yeah, as a member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, one place where Democrats and Republicans, this goes to Zach's question in Waupaca, one place Republicans and Democrats have broad agreement on is the need for us to be properly taking care of our highways, our bridges, our airports, our seaports, the general overall infrastructure in the country. We need to find a long-term funding mechanism, and we need to pass a long-term reauthorization of the highway bill. That comes up this year, and I sit on the committee that authorizes that work, and I'm looking forward to working on that because that has broad bipartisan support.
All right, well, we're out of time. Thanks very much for being with us, and
thanks,
go
Joyce.
Back.
Thank you.
Reid Riebel, Republican U.S. Representative from Appleton. In our first half hour, we heard from Democratic U.S. Representative Ron Kind. Thanks very much to Bill Martins, to Cynthia Schuster, to Christy Taylor, and to Kayla Blado, who are producing these programs. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. Coming up in our next hour, we are going to talk about forgiveness and how we can bring forgiveness and its benefits into our lives. Tomorrow at this time, we are going to talk about Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. We'll talk about why it's difficult for cops today. Tomorrow.